You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up with the announcement that Foxconn has chosen Mount Pleasant as a site for its multi-billion dollar plant, we'll look at the water demands that could come with that deal. First, Russian hacking and social media campaigns were big stories in the 2016 election campaign. Our next guest says we're likely to see more hacking efforts like that in the future. The 2016 attacks targeted political parties, campaigns, and think tanks, and social media and fake news campaigns were directed at potential voters. But our next guest is worried about a new type of target, civil society organizations that she says are vital to a functioning democracy. Things like religious organizations, charities, activist groups, unions, and a number of other potentially vulnerable groups. Susan Landau joins us now. She's a professor at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy and the School of Engineering's Department of Computer Science at Tufts University. Her forthcoming book is called Listening In, Cybersecurity in an Insecure Age. She wrote about Russian hacking at the Lawfare blog. Susan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me.
Well, what kind of civil society organizations could be vulnerable to future Russian hacking?
In fact, some were during the last election. The Office of the Director of National Intelligence announced in January that organizations that were viewed as likely to help shape American political views had been the attempt, the Russians had attempted to hack some of these. And I talked with several, one of which had been informed by the FBI that they were a subject. These are the kinds of think tanks that help write policy papers that influence DC, but there are also organizations that influence public opinion, which then floats back, goes back towards the government.
Why would Russian hackers want to target these kinds of organizations instead of some of the higher, more prestigious things that we saw in the last election, looking for the White House, for instance?
When in democracies, civil society is extremely important. They're the social glue that connects the people with their legislators. Most people don't follow what happens in Congress every day and what happens in the State House. Instead, you have both the newspapers and the press, but you also have, whether it's Sierra Club or the American Cancer Society might become involved in the issue of smoking as it did many years ago, or the National Academy of Sciences, or the Southern Poverty Law Center, or much smaller groups, the PTAs or the national PTAs. All of these different groups function within a democratic society to help connect the people and the government. If you're trying to disrupt a democracy, you try to disrupt the elections, but you also try to disrupt the people's connection to their government. And a very good way to disrupt it is through civil society.
As far as you know right now, are some of the groups that we were talking about, these civil society organizations, are they prepared to withstand an attack of hacking like this at that magnitude?
Well, in fact, nobody is prepared to really withstand an attack if a nation state is going against a particular target. It's very hard to do so. The question is whether or not they are well prepared, whether or not they're using sort of the best tools that we have now. And the answer is mostly not. Many of these civil society organizations are work on a threadbare budget. This is not the kind of attack they expected. Now, any organization I mention, I'm talking about as a hypothetical. None of them would say that they've been attacked and so on. But if you think of organizations like Planned Parenthood or the Southern Poverty Law Center, those are organizations that are used to being attacked in many ways. But if you think of something like Sierra Club or the American Bar Association or the American Cancer Society, those are not organizations that would expect to be the targets of attacks, let alone the targets of a country like Russia.
Now, at first glance, attacking, say, the Sierra Club, it doesn't seem as high stakes as targeting a voting system. So what kind of damage could be done?
So Sierra Club is trusted by many people. In fact, Sierra Club is one of those organizations whose membership jumped after the Reagan election, jumped after the Trump election, as people who cared about conservation said, gee, I have to do my work to protect the environment. Now, if Sierra Club's records were hacked, for example, if it were preparing a report about damage to the environment or threats to water, and that report, those reports turned out to be inaccurate because somebody tampered with the data, Sierra Club's reputation decreases and people feel disconnected. There was a book 20, 30 years ago called Bowling Alone, about how the U.S. has moved from a society that had a very vibrant civil society to one that's much less well-connected. And that may, in fact, have something to do with the divided country we now see. But it's civil society that connects us, so that when we have disagreements about whether or not funds should go to the libraries or to subsidizing school buses or schools, or whether we should put a low-income housing in a particular neighborhood, it's the civil ties that connect us that enable those decisions to go well together. But if you create distrust in civil society, then eventually you have a much less well-functioning democracy. This is something that Russia knows very well, having disrupted civil society in the Soviet Union after the Russian Revolution, and having done the same in Eastern Europe after the Second World War.
We're talking to Susan Landau right now from Tufts University. Her forthcoming book is called Listening In, Cybersecurity in an Insecure Age. And Susan, getting at more in the same vein that we were just talking about, you write about ClimateGate, a real-life example, and how that played out. Could you walk us through what we saw there?
Absolutely. That's a classic case. Thank you for asking me. So in ClimateGate, the emails from the climate study group at the University of East Anglia in the UK were stolen and then published. And journalists who opposed the idea, well, groups that opposed the idea that climate change was real and was happening, began to selectively quote, making it appear that the scientists who were working on climate change were exaggerating, were saying things that weren't scientifically true. And between the time the data was first taken and several years later, public support in the U.S. on climate change dropped significantly. That is to say, the public less believed in the issue and less believed in scientists. And that was an extremely good example of what happens when you have that kind of disruption.
And you describe that example, but also the Russian hacking campaign, as a new kind of warfare. How does that new kind of warfare operate?
So let me first tell you about the old kind of warfare. We anticipated that any kind of cyber attack would be a disruption of critical infrastructure, whether of the power grid or the financial sector or water and dams. This one instead works on people's heads, and it disconnects people from each other and from the government. In an authoritarian society, you're simply told what's going on, and there is no dissent. Whereas in democracies, you function by rich dissent and then rich coming together. But if you can't trust private sector organizations, if you can't trust the organizations between you and the governments, whether it is, in fact, the journalism, or it's through fake news, or these civil society organizations, you get a real disruption in the body politic. Nobody knows what's true, what's correct, and they stop trusting the sort of authorities that used to be trusted, like academia, like think tanks, like professional organizations. And it's very unhealthy.
Now, you say that this new kind of warfare is coming. In fact, you say it's already here. We're just going to see more of it. But how do we, who aren't maybe a player within these organizations, how do we, the public, get ready for something like this, to prepare ourselves mentally and with a community structure?
Well, one of the important issues is to start reading information really critically. This is something that we've, of course, always known in democracy, to distinguish between yellow journalism and serious journalism, but it's become much more important. I grew up in the era of Walter Cronkite and authoritative figures. Now, there are some problems with authoritative figures because there were many people who weren't allowed to be authoritative figures. But in a world where we don't have authoritative figures, learning to read the newspapers, the social media carefully, thoroughly, and with a really critical eye is very important. The other aspect, of course, is that we want to take information security far more seriously. So the kinds of steps that various of the companies are taking for two-factor authentication, so you have your phone, for example, which authenticates you to an online account, for using communications that are ephemeral. We used to talk on the telephone, then we moved to email and chat, but the problem with email and chat is that many of the conversations that you might want to be ephemeral, you might make a critical comment about a colleague or a friend, you don't want that to stay around. It's one thing when you say it on the phone, it's another thing when it's an email, a third thing when it's an email that's published on the front page or the second page of the Washington Post or the New York Times. Things like that, we have to just learn to read and think far more critically, and we also have to use information security techniques far more broadly. And that's the second is a very unusual step for the public at large. But
Susan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Now, Susan Landau, professor of law and diplomacy and computer science at Tufts University. Her forthcoming book is Listening In, Cybersecurity in an Insecure Age.